worried. You're both sweet, and no one will ever take care of me as well as you, even though you worry like old chickens in a hen house. I smiled at my fierce ladies. So, you sent James Brown packing, and then what happened? Sophia asked, and I finished the last of the story. Simon's entry, his apology, the disappearing Purina, his invitation.
So you just had this epiphany in the bathroom, just like that? Go to Spain with Simon? Mimi finally asked.
Yep. I didn't really overthink it. I can't explain it. I just know I should go on this trip. I mean, I've always wanted to go to Spain, and I know he'll be a good tour guide, and come on, how much fun will it be? We'll have a blast together.
Bullshit, Sophia stated simply.
Come again?
I call bullshit, Caroline.
You're going because you want something to happen there with him. Don't deny it. She eyed me severely. I deny nothing, I quipped, signaling the waiter for our check.
No more harem, huh? Mimi asked.
So it would seem. I'm not a fool. I know a man like him doesn't change overnight, but if Giggler is out of the way before Spain, well then, that's a Simon of a different color now, isn't it? I grinned cheekily, wiggling my eyebrows at my girls.
Why, Caroline Reynolds, I do believe you plan on seducing this man, Sophia said,
and Mimi clapped her hands with glee.
Simon's going to bring back the O, Mimi cheered, attracting more than a little attention. Oh, hush. We'll see.
If, and this is a big fat if, ladies, if I ever allow anything to happen between Simon and me, it's gonna be on my terms, which would include no harem, no drinking, and no hot tubbing.
I don't know, Caroline. No drinking? I think it'd be criminal to be in Spain and not be indulging in a little sangria, Mimi piped up.
Well, I do enjoy me some sangria, I mused.
Visions of Simon and me, sipping sangria while watching the Spanish sunset. Text between Simon and Caroline.
So are you the type of girl who wears a big floppy hat on the beach?
Pardon me?
You know, those crazy giant beach hats. Do you have one?
As it happens, yes. Is this a concern of yours?
Concern, no. Just trying to get a visual of you on the beach in Spain.
How's that working out for you?
Pretty spiffy.
Spiffy? Did you just say spiffy?
I typed it, actually. You got something against spiffy?
This explains the old records.
Hey,
I enjoy the old records. You know this.
I do know this.
Are we really going to Spain together?
Yep.
Are you home? I didn't see the rover this morning.
Checking up on me?
Perhaps. Where are you, Simon?
Have a shoot in L.A. Driving back in a few days. Can I see you when I get back?
We'll see.
I'll play records for you.
Spiffy. So since things are all completed on the Nicholson project, I was thinking, I have a jump on the commercial project I'm starting next, and you mentioned before that I could take some time off before we get busy for the holiday season, that, well, maybe I could...
Spit it out, Caroline.
You trying to ask me if you can go to Spain with Simon? Gillian demanded, not trying very hard to hide her smile.
Maybe, I winced, dropping my forehead to the desk.
You're a grown woman, capable of making her own decisions. You know I think it's a good time to take vacation, so why should I tell you whether you should go away with Simon or not?
Gillian, to clarify, I'm not going away with Simon. You make it sound like some illicit affair.
Right, right. It's just two young people off to enjoy a little Spanish culture.
How could I forget? Jillian drawled, insinuation all over her face, as well as a little satisfaction. She was enjoying my squirming.
Okay, so can I go? I asked, knowing I would never hear the end of it, but past caring.
Of course you can, but can I just say one thing? She asked, eyebrows raised.
Like I could stop you, I grumbled.
You couldn't, actually. All I ask is that you have a good time, play hard, but take care of him while you're there, okay? She asked, her face taking on a seriousness I rarely saw.
Take care of him? What is he, 7? I laughed, stifling it immediately when I saw she was not kidding.
Caroline, this trip will change things. You must know that. And I love you both. I don't want either of you to get hurt, no matter what transpires while you're there, she said softly. I started to make a joke, but I stopped. I knew what she was asking.
Jillian, I don't know quite what's going on between Simon and me, and I've no idea what's going to happen in Spain. But I can tell you, I'm excited about this trip. And I get the sense he is, too, I added.
Oh, my dear. He's definitely excited. Just... Oh, never mind. You're both adults. Go crazy on each other in Spain.
First you tell me to be gentle, and now you tell me to go crazy? I grumbled.
She reached across the desk to pat my hand affectionately. Then she took a deep breath and changed the mood in the room entirely. Now then, fill me in on where we stand with James Brown. What's left to be done?
I smiled and flipped my planner open to the end of the week, when I would be finished with all things James Brown. A few nights later, I was settling into my couch comfortably with Mr. Clive and Barefoot Contessa, when I heard something in the hallway. Clive and I looked at each other, and he jumped off my lap to investigate. I knew Simon wasn't due home for another day or so, based on his texts and the fact that I might have been counting the days, so I followed Clive to my old post, the peephole. As I peered out into the hallway, there was a flash of strawberry blonde hair at Simon's door. Who was visiting Simon? Was I wrong to stare? What was that package she had? The woman the hair belonged to knocked once, then twice, and then before I knew it, she whirled about and looked directly at my door, curiously staring at my peephole. Not accustomed to anyone staring at my peephole, I froze, eyes unblinking as she appraised my door. She crossed the tiny landing and rapped soundly on my door. Surprised, I jumped back a little, bumping into my umbrella stand and letting her know there was, in fact, someone home. I turned my face to the side and shouted, "Coming!" Then I proceeded to walk in place as though I was headed for the door. Clive looked on with interest, tossing his head and assuring me I was not nearly as clever as I thought I was. I made a great noise of clicking the locks and then opened the door. We appraised each other instantly in the way that women do. She was tall and beautiful in a cold, patrician way. She wore a black suit, severely cut and buttoned up to the collar. Her strawberry blonde hair was twisted and pinned back, although one solitary piece had marched away from her sister's and now hung in her face. She pushed it back behind her ear, her cherry red lips pursed as she finished looking me over and offered a thin smile.
"Caroline, yes?" she asked,
a solidly British accent piercing the air as clearly as her attitude. I already knew I didn't care for this woman. "Yes, can I help you?" I suddenly felt underdressed in my Garfield boxers and tank top. I shifted my weight from one leg to the other, feet clad in giant socks. I shifted my weight again, realizing I probably looked like I had to pee. I also realized at the same time that this woman made me nervous, and I had no idea why. I straightened up immediately, putting on my game face. This all took place in less than 5 seconds, a lifetime in the world of woman figuring out the other woman. I need to drop this off for Simon, and he mentioned that if he wasn't at home, to leave it at the flat across from his, that Caroline would take care of it for him. "You're Caroline, so here you go, I suppose," she finished, thrusting a cardboard box at me. I took it, taking my eyes off hers for a moment. "What does he think I am, a mailbox?" I muttered, setting it on the table just inside the door and turning back to the woman. "May I tell him who dropped this off, or will he know?" I asked. She was still looking me over as though I were a great puzzle. "Oh, he'll know," she answered, her cool tone sounding musical but clipped at the same time. As an American, I'll admit I am always fascinated by a British accent, but could do without this particular side of superiority. "Okay, well, I'll make sure he gets it." I nodded, leaning my hand on the door. I closed it ever so slightly, but she didn't move. "Is there anything else?" I asked. I could hear Ina working on her shortbread in the other room, and I didn't want to miss any KitchenAid porn. "No, nothing else," she replied, still making no move. "Okay, then, have a good night," I said, almost making it a question as I started to close the door. Just as I did, she stepped forward enough so I was forced to catch the door before it hit her. "Yes?" I asked, my irritation beginning to show through. This limey was stopping me from seeing the completion of the pecan squares I'd been waiting for all episode. "Well, I'm really glad to have met you," she answered, her eyes finally softening and a hint of a smile breaking through her facade. "And you really are quite lovely," she added. I stared back at her. Her voice sounded oddly familiar, but I couldn't quite place it. "Okay, thank you," I answered as she started for the stairwell. Her heel caught just slightly, and she stumbled a little. As I closed the door, she began to giggle as she worked her shoe loose. That's when I realized who'd just visited. My eyes widened, I'm sure to the size of Dahlia's, and I hurled the door back open. I gaped at her, and her face broke open into the widest, cheeky grin. She winked as I blushed. I'd been present for some of this lady's greatest moments. She wiggled her fingers at me and disappeared down the stairs. Clive brought me back from my stupor by nipping me on the calf, and I closed the door. I sat on my couch, pecan squares all but forgotten as my brain processed everything. Giggler had said I was lovely. She basically told me Simon had told her I was lovely. Simon thought I was lovely. Was Giggler out of the harem? Was there even a harem left? What did this mean? Would I only think in questions now? And if so, who is Eric Cartman's father? Text between Simon and Caroline.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
I asked you first.
You sure did.
Waiting.
Me too.
Jesus, you're stubborn. I'm driving back from L.A.
Happy now?
Yes, thank you.
I'm baking pumpkin bread.
It's a good thing I'm at a gas station right now and not driving, or I would have had a hard time keeping the car on the road.
Right. The baking gets you worked up, doesn't it?
You have no idea.
So I probably shouldn't tell you I smell like cinnamon and ginger right now?
Caroline,
my raisins are soaking in brandy this very minute.
That's it.
I peered out the window again, scanning the street below, and still no sign of the rover. The fog was quite thick, and although I didn't want to be a nag, I was becoming a little concerned that he wasn't home yet. Here I sat, with cooling loaves, and no Simon had shown up to inhale them. I picked up my phone to text him, but then called instead. I didn't want him texting while he was on the road. It rang a few times, and then he picked up.
Hi there, my favorite baker,
he purred, and my knees clanked together. He was like the best Kegel exercise ever. Instant clench.
Are you close?
Pardon me?
He laughed.
Close to home. Are you close to home?
I asked, rolling my eyes and unclenching.
Yes, why?
There seems to be a lot of fog tonight. I mean, more than usual. Be careful, okay?
That's very sweet of you to be looking out for me.
Shut up, mister. I always look out for my friends, I scolded, beginning to get ready for bed. I was a multitasker from way back. I could do my taxes while getting waxed and not bat an eye. I could certainly get undressed while talking to Simon.
Ahem. Friends? Is that what we are?
He asked.
What the hell else would we be?
I shot back, pulling off my shorts and grabbing a pair of thick woolen socks. The floor was chilly tonight.
Hmm,
he muttered as I took off my T-shirt and slipped into a button-down to sleep in.
Well, while you're humming,
I have to tell you about a visit I had earlier this week from a friend of yours.
A friend of mine? This sounds intriguing.
Yep. Julie Andrews' accent? Buttoned-up Brit? Ring any bells? She dropped off a box for you. His laughter rang out immediately.
Julie Andrews' accent? That's brilliant. That must have been Lizzie. You met Lizzie.
He laughed like this was the funniest thing ever.
Lizzie Schmizzy?
She'll always be giggler to me. I smirked, sitting on the edge of my bed and applying some lotion.
Why do you call her giggler?
He asked, playing innocent, and I could tell he was on the verge of absolute hysterics.
You really need me to tell you? Come on. Even you can't be that thick. Never mind. Walked right into that one.
I cut him off before he could regale me with how thick he was, indeed. I'd been pressed up against that very thick in a hot tub, so I was familiar.
Kegel.
And thank you, another Kegel.
I like messing with you, Nighty Girl. It gives me a chuckle.
First spiffy, now a chuckle?
I worry about you, Simon.
I returned to the living room to turn off lights and get the place ready for bed. This included freshening Clive's water bowl and hiding a few pounce treats around the apartment. He enjoyed playing big game hunter while I slept sometimes, with the pounce, of course, playing the part of the big game. Some nights the pillows were unfortunately involved, as well as any hair ties, loose shoelaces, and pretty much anything else that seemed appealing around 2 in the morning.
Some mornings my place looked like Wild Kingdom had been filmed overnight.
Well, no worries. I'll pick it up when I get back.
So did you two have a nice chat?
We chatted briefly, yes.
But no dirty secrets were shared. Although with the thin walls, I'm already a bit familiar. How is the lonely Haramet? Missing her sisters? I flipped off the lights and padded through the kitchen to fetch the big game. I was dying to ask him if he'd actually broken up with Giggler. Did he? Did he not?
She may be a bit lonely, yes, he said,
in what I thought sounded like a careful way. Lonely because, I led, pausing in my pounce scattering.
Lonely because, well, let's just say for the first time in a very long time, I am, well, I am, you see.
He stuttered and stalled, dancing around the issue.
Go on, out with it.
I instructed, barely breathing.
Without female companionship. Or as you would say, harem-free.
His words came out in a quiet whoosh, and my legs began a little shimmy-shake. This made the pounce shimmy-shake in their container, alerting Clive that his hunt had begun early.
Harem free, huh? I breathed back, visions of Sugar Simons dancing in my head.
Single Sugar Simons. Single Sugar Simons in Spain.
Yeah,
he whispered, and we were both silent for what seemed like months, although in actuality it was only enough time for Clive to claim his first victim. The pounce hidden in my tennis shoe by the front door. I walked over to congratulate him on his catch.
She said something curious, I mentioned, breaking the spell.
Oh, yeah? What's that? He asked.
She told me that I was, and I quote, quite lovely.
Did she know?
He laughed, easing back into comfortable.
Yes, and the thing of it is, she said it like she was agreeing with something someone else had already said. Now, I'm not a girl who fishes for compliments, but it would seem, Simon, that you were talking sweet about me.
I smiled, knowing my face was breaking into a pink glow. I'd started for the bedroom when I heard a soft knocking at the door. I walked back to unlock and open the door without looking through the peephole. I had a strong feeling I knew who was on the other side. There he stood, phone cradled to his ear, holding his duffel bag and smiling a big, toothy grin.
I told her you were lovely. But the truth is, you're more than lovely, he said,
bowing his head toward mine and bringing his face to within inches of my own.
More?
I asked, barely drawing breath. I know my grin matched his.
You're exquisite,
he said. And with that, I invited him in. While wearing only my button-down. From far away, the O cheered. An hour later, we sat together at the kitchen table, a decimated loaf in front of us. In between his frantic pawing, I'd managed a bite or two. The rest now lived in Simon's tummy, which he proudly thumped like a melon. We'd talked and eaten, gotten caught up, watched Clive as he finished his hunt, and now relaxed as the coffee brewed. Simon's bag rested by the front door still,
He hadn't even gone to his apartment yet. I was still in my button-down, feet curled beneath the chair as I stared at him. We were so comfortable, and yet that low-level hum, that electricity always sparking and snarking between us, continued.
"Fantastic touch, by the way. The raisins? Loved them."
He smirked at me, poking one more in his mouth.
"You're terrible."
I shook my head, stretching up out of my chair and collecting the plates and the few crumbs that hadn't been inhaled. I could sense him watching me as I moved about the kitchen. I grabbed the pot of coffee and raised my eyebrows at him. He nodded. I stood next to his chair to fill his mug, and I caught him peeking at my legs below my shirt.
"See something you like?"
I leaned across him to the sugar bowl.
"Yep,"
he answered, leaning toward me to take it.
"Sugar?"
"Yep."
"Cream?"
"Yep."
"That all you can say?"
"Nope."
"Give me something, then. Anything." I giggled, walking back around to my side of the table. Once again he watched me as I arranged myself in the chair.
"How about this?"
he finally said, resting on his elbows, face intense.
"As I mentioned earlier, I broke it off with Lizzie."
I stared back, barely breathing. I tried to play it cool, so cool, but I couldn't stop the grin sneaking across my face.
"I see you are not at all broken up by this,"
he scoffed, sitting back in his chair.
"Not so much, no."
"Want the truth?" I asked, the grin ushering in a sudden surge of confidence.
"Truth would be good."
"I mean, truth, truth. Back-and-forth truth. No witty comebacks, no snappy banter, although we do give great banter."
"We do. But I could go for some truth," he said,
his voice quiet as his sapphire eyes blazed away at me.
"Okay, truth.
I'm glad you broke things off with Lizzie."
"You are you?"
"Yes."
"Why did you?"
"Truth now,"
I reminded him. He regarded me for a moment, sipped his coffee, ran his hands through his hair in a maniacal way, and took a deep breath.
"Okay, truth. I broke it off with Lizzie because I didn't want to be with her anymore. With any other women, in fact,"
he finished, setting his cup down.
"I'm sure we'll always be friends, but the truth is, I've been finding lately that three women, it's a lot for me to handle. I'm thinking of paring things down a bit, maybe trying just one for a while."
He smiled, the blue getting dangerous. Knowing I was a grin and a clench away from total embarrassment, I stood quickly and went to dump my coffee in the sink. I paused there for a second, only a second, thoughts whirling. He was single. He was single. Sweet mother of pearl, Wallbanger was single. I felt him move across the kitchen and come stand behind me. I froze, feeling his hands gently brush my hair away from my shoulders and slip down to my hips. His mouth, his ever-loving mouth, barely touched the shell of my ear, and he whispered,
"Truth, I can't stop thinking about you."
Still facing away from him, my mouth dropped open and my eyes went wide, torn between fist-pumping and actual kitchen sex. Before I could decide, his mouth moved more purposefully, pressing into the skin just below my ear and making my brain burn and parts below dance a jig.
His hands gripped my hips, and he turned me toward him to face that body and grin. I quickly composed my face, trying desperately to keep it together.
"Truth? I've been thinking about you since the night you banged on my door," he whispered, bending down to kiss the hollow of my neck with breathtaking precision.
His hair tickled my nose, and I fought to keep my hands to myself. He pushed me to the side a little and surprised me by lifting me onto the counter. My legs automatically opened to allow him between them, the universal law of wallbanger superseding any actual thought I had in my head. Not to worry, my thighs knew what to do. One of his hands snuck around to the small of my back, while the other gripped the back of my neck.
"Truth?"
he asked one more time, pulling my hips to the edge of the counter, which forced me to lean back as my legs once more went on autopilot and wrapped themselves around his waist.
"I want you in Spain,"
he breathed, then brought his mouth to mine. Somewhere a kitty began to call, and an O finally began her journey home. "More wine, Mr. Parker?"
"No more for me, Caroline."
"I'm fine, thank you." I stretched out luxuriously in my seat. First class to LaGuardia, then first class all the way to Malaga, Spain. We'd be taking a car from there to Nerja, the small coastal town where Simon had rented a house. Scuba diving, spelunking, hiking, beautiful beaches, and mountains all set in a quaint village. Simon squirmed in his seat and shot an angry look over his shoulder.
"What? What's the problem?" I asked, looking behind and seeing nothing out of the ordinary.
"That kid keeps banging my seat,"
he grumbled through clenched teeth. I laughed for a solid 20 minutes. Chapter 16. We did it too soon. We should have waited.
We waited long enough. Are you kidding? You know I was right. It was time to do it.
Time to do it? What a crock! We could have waited just a little longer, and then we wouldn't be in the mess we're in now.
Well, I didn't hear you complaining at the time. You seemed pretty pleased, as I recall.
I couldn't complain. My mouth was full. But I had a feeling. I just knew this was wrong. What we were doing was inherently wrong.
Okay, I give up. You tell me how to fix this.
Well, for starters, you're holding it upside down, I shot back, grabbing the map and turning it right side up. We'd been parked along the side of the road for 5 minutes, trying to figure out how to get to Nerja. After landing in Malaga, navigating customs, navigating the rental car system, and finally navigating our way successfully away from the city center, we were now lost. Simon drove, so I was in charge of the map. And by that, I mean, he took it away from me every 10 minutes or so, looked it over, hummed and hawed, and then thrust it back my way. He didn't actually listen to anything I had to say, instead relying on his innate man map. He also refused to turn on the GPS that had been provided for us, determined to get us there the old-fashioned way. Which is why we were now lost. Taking a train would have been too easy. Simon needed a car to get around for his photo shoots, which was ultimately why we were here. After flying through the night, we were both exhausted, but the best way to fight jet lag, allegedly, was to get on local time as quickly as possible. We had both agreed not to nap until we could go to sleep that night. Now we argued about where we took the wrong turn,
I'd been devouring some churros from a roadside stand when the wrong turn supposedly took place, and so we played Place the Blame. All I'm saying is that if someone hadn't been stuffing her face and was watching for the turn, we wouldn't be... Stuffing my face? Seriously? You were stealing my churros. I told you to get your own when we stopped. Well, I wasn't hungry at first, but then you were smacking your lips and licking that chocolate and, well, I got distracted. He looked up from the map, which he'd spread out on the hood of the car, and grinned, breaking the tension. Distracted? I grinned back, leaning a little closer. As he looked at the map, I looked at him. How could someone who'd been on a plane for the last 100 years look as good as he did? But there he was, faded jeans, black T-shirt, dark blue North Face jacket, 24 hours worth of stubble begging to be licked. Who licked stubble? Me, that's who. He braced himself on my arms as he studied the map, his lips moving silently as he tried to figure it out. I snuck underneath his arms, draping myself across the hood of the car as shamelessly as a pin-up girl in a garage calendar. Can I make a suggestion?
Is it a lewd suggestion?
Surprisingly, no. Can we please turn on the GPS? I'd like to make it there before I have to leave in a few days, I moaned. Due to my last-minute booking, I had to fly back a day before Simon. But 5 days in Spain, I was not complaining.
Caroline, only pussies use GPS, he scoffed, turning to the map again.
Well, this pussy is dying for some dinner, and a shower, and a bed, and to get rid of this jet lag. So unless you want to see me reenact It Happened One Night, Spanish version, turn on the GPS, Simon. I grabbed him by the North Face and pulled him down to me. Did that sound harsh? I whispered, giving him the tiniest of kisses on the chin.
Yes. I'm terrified of you now.
Does this mean GPS?
It means GPS.
He sighed resignedly, leaning back and pulling me off the car with him. I gave a little cheer and started for the door.
No, no, no. You were harsh, Nighty Girl. I'm gonna need some sugar,
he instructed, eyes twinkling. You need some sugar? I asked. He tugged on my arm, bringing me back to him.
Yes, I require it.
You're twisted, Simon. I leaned into him, slipping my arms around his neck.
You have no idea.
He licked his lips and waggled his eyebrows like an old-timey gangster. Come get your sugar, I teased as he brought his lips to mine. I would never get tired of kissing Simon. I mean, how could I? Since the night he truthed me right up onto my kitchen counter, we'd slowly been exploring this new side of our relationship. Underneath all the snark and spark, there'd been some serious sexual tension building these many months, and we were letting it all out, albeit slowly. Sure, we could have raced right back to the bedroom that night and let the sex ring out across the city for days, but Simon and I, without saying a word, seemed to be on the same page for once, and we were content to let this unfold. He was wooing me, and I was letting him woo. I wanted the woo. I deserved the woo. I needed the wow that would surely follow the woo, but for now, the woo, it was woe. And speaking of woo, my hands slipped into his hair, tugging and twisting and trying to pull his entire body inside my own.
He groaned into my mouth. I felt his tongue touch mine, and I fell apart at the seams. I sighed the tiniest whimper, and it became harder and harder to kiss him due to the giant grin overtaking my face. He pulled back a little and laughed.
"You sure look happy."
"Keep kissing me, please," I insisted, bringing his face back to mine.
"It's like kissing a jack-o'-lantern. What's with the grin?"
He smiled down at me with a grin that looked as wide as my own. "We're in Spain, Simon. Grinning is implied." I sighed contentedly, messing with his hair.
"And here I thought it was all to do with my kissing," he answered,
kissing me again, gently, sweetly.
"Okay, cowboy. Ready to see where the GPS takes us?" I asked, stepping away.
I couldn't keep my hands on him for too long, or we'd never leave.
"Let's see how lost we really are."
He smiled, and we were on our way.
"I think this is the turn." "Yep, this is it," he said.
I bounced in my seat. Turned out, we were closer than we thought, and we'd gotten a bit antsy. As we made one last turn, we looked at each other, and I squealed. We'd seen bits of the ocean for the last few miles or so, peeking out behind a stand of trees or over a cliff. Now, as we turned down a tiny cobblestone drive, the realization that Simon had rented a house not just near the beach, but on the beach, washed over me, and I was silenced by the sight. Simon pulled up to the house, the tires crunching on the rounded stones. When he turned off the car, I could hear the waves crashing against the rocky coast about 100 feet away. We sat for a moment, just taking it all in and grinning at each other, before I scrambled out of the car.
"This is where we're staying? This entire house, it's yours?" I exclaimed as he grabbed our bags and came to stand next to me.
"It's ours, yeah."
He smiled and gestured for me to walk ahead of him. The house was charming and magnificent all at the same time. White stucco walls, clay tile roof, clean lines and soft archways. Orange trees lined the walkway from the drive, and bougainvillea climbed the garden walls. The house was a classic cottage, built to weather the sea and cocoon those inside. As Simon looked under the flower pots for the key, I inhaled the citrus scents and the distinctly salty air.
"Aha! Got it. Ready to see the inside?"
He struggled with the door for a moment before turning to face me. I reached for his hand, threading my fingers through his, and leaned in to kiss his cheek. "Thank you."
"For what?"
"For bringing me here." I smiled and kissed him square on the lips.
"Mmm, more of that sugar you promised me."
He dropped the bag and pulled me close.
"Sugar this? Let's see the house," I cried, wiggling free and charging past him through the door.
But as soon as I made it past the entryway, I stopped cold. Close on my heels, he bumped into me as I took it all in. A sunken living room, dotted with plush white sofas and comfy-looking chairs, opened up to what I assumed was the kitchen. French doors at the back of the house opened to several large, terraced patios which sunk down toward the rocky beach. But what had stopped me cold was the ocean. All across the back, through the giant windows, was the deep blue of the lazy Mediterranean. The coastline curved back to the town of Nerja,
where the lights were just beginning to sparkle as twilight drifted over the beach, illuminating the other white houses that clung to the cliffs. Remembering how to move, I ran to push open the doors and let the soft air spill over me and into the house, blanketing everything in the evening's perfume. I walked to the wrought iron railing, which perched at the edge of an earthen tile patio flanked by olive trees. Placing my hands on the warm metal, I looked and looked and looked. I felt Simon walk up behind me and, without a word, place his arms around my waist. He nestled into me, resting his head on my shoulder. I leaned back, feeling the angles and planes of his body fit against my own. You know those moments when everything is exactly the way it was meant to be? When you find yourself and your entire universe aligning in perfect synchronization, and you know you couldn't possibly be more content? I was inside that very moment and fully conscious of it. I giggled a little, feeling Simon's smile stretch across his face as he pressed into my neck.
"It's good, right?"
he whispered. "It's so good," I answered, and we watched the sunset in spellbound silence. After watching the sunset until it was totally gone, we explored the rest of the house. It seemed more and more beautiful with every room, and I squealed once again at the sight of the kitchen. It was as if I'd been transported to Ina's home in East Hampton with a Spanish flair. Sub-zero fridge, gorgeous granite countertops, and a Viking stove. I didn't even want to know how much Simon was paying for this house. I'd decided to just enjoy. And enjoy we did, running back and forth, laughing like kids when we found the bidet in the hallway bathroom. And then we entered the master bedroom. I came around the corner and saw him standing at the end of the hallway just outside the door. "What the hell did you find that has you so quiet?" "Oh, my. Would you look at that?" I stopped next to him, admiring from the doorway. If my life had a soundtrack, the theme from 2001 A Space Odyssey would have been playing right now. There, in the middle of a corner room with its own terrace overlooking the most beautiful ocean in the world, was the biggest mother-loving bed I'd ever seen. Carved out of what looked to be teak, it was as big as a football field. Thousands of silky soft white pillows stacked against the headboard, spilling down over a white duvet. It was folded down just so, the million or so thread count sheets shining, actually shining, as though they were lit from within. Sheer white curtains hung from rods suspended over the bed, creating a canopy while even more curtains hung in the windows, overlooking the sea below. The windows were open, and all the curtains blew gently in the breeze, giving the entire room a billowy, flouncy, wind-blown effect. It was the bed to end all beds. It was the bed that all the little beds aspired to be when they grew up. It was bed heaven. "Wow," I managed, still in the hallway next to Simon. It was hypnotic. It was like a bed siren luring us in so we could crash.
"You could say that again,"
he stammered, his eyes never leaving the bed. "Wow," I repeated, still staring. I couldn't stop. And I was suddenly very, impossibly, excruciatingly nervous.
I had a lovely case of performance anxiety, party of one. Simon chuckled at my weak joke, and it brought me back to him.
No pressure, huh?
He said, eyes shy.
Huh? Nerves? Party of two?
I had a choice. I could go with conventional wisdom, said wisdom being that two grown-ups on vacation together in a gorgeous house with a bed that was sex incarnate would immediately begin non-stop sexing. Or I could let us both off the hook and just enjoy. Enjoy being together and let things happen when they happen.
Yeah. I liked this idea better.
I winked and took a running leap onto the bed, bouncing pillows all over the room. I peeked over the remaining mound to see him leaning in the doorway, a sight I had seen so many times before. He looked a little nervous, but still beautiful.
So, where are you sleeping? I called.
And his face relaxed into a smile. My smile.
Wine?
Am I breathing?
Wine it is,
he snorted, selecting a bottle of rosé from the generously stocked wine fridge. Simon had arranged to have some basic groceries delivered to the house before our arrival. Nothing fancy, but enough to nosh on and make us comfortable. It was now fully dark, and any thoughts we'd had about going into town faded away as the jet lag loomed. Instead, we'd stay in tonight, get a good night's sleep, and head into town in the morning. There was a roast chicken, olives, a wedge of manchego, some gorgeous-looking serrano ham, and enough other little odds and ends to make a meal. I assembled plates while he poured the wine, and soon we were sitting on the terrace. The ocean crashed below, and the wooden walkway down to the beach was strung with tiny white lights. We should go down to the beach before bed, at least take a little walk.
Done. What do you want to do tomorrow?
Depends. When do you need to start working?
Well, I know some of the places I need to go, but I need to do a little scouting still. Want to come along?
Of course. Start in town in the morning and see where that leads? I asked, nibbling on an olive. He raised his glass and nodded.
To seeing where it leads, he toasted.
I raised my glass to his. I'll second that. Our glasses clinked and our eyes locked. We both smiled, a secret smile. We were finally alone, all to ourselves, and there was no place else on the planet I wanted to be. We ate our dinner, stealing little glances at each other throughout, and sipped our wine. It made me drowsy and a little touchy-feely. After that, we picked our way carefully over the rocky shoreline to the beach. We'd grasped hands to navigate, but never let go. Now we stood at the edge of the earth, the strong, salty wind whipping through our hair and clothes, buffeting us back a bit.
It's nice being with you, I told him.
I like holding your hand, I admitted, feeling brave from the wine. Witty banter had its place, but sometimes all you need is the truth. He didn't respond, simply smiled and brought my hand to his mouth, placing a small kiss. We watched the waves, and when he pulled me to his chest, snuggling me to him, I breathed out slowly. Had it really been so long since I'd felt... Oh, what was it I was feeling? Cared for?
Jillian told me you know what happened to my parents.
He said so softly I could barely hear him.
Yes,
She told me.
They used to hold hands all the time. Not for show, though, you know.
I nodded into his chest and breathed him in.
I always see these couples that hold hands and make such a show of it, calling each other baby and sweetie and honey. It seems like, I don't know, false somehow. Like, would they be doing it if they weren't in front of anyone?
I nodded again.
My parents? I never thought much about it at the time, but when I think about it now, I realize their hands were practically sewn together, always with the hand holding, even when no one was looking, right? I'd come home after practice and find them watching TV at either end of the couch, but with their hands propped up on a pillow so they could still be touching. It was just, I don't know, it was nice.
My hand still tucked into his own squeezed, and I felt his strong fingers squeeze back. Sounds like they were still a couple, not just a mom and dad, I said, hearing his breath speed up a bit.
Yes, exactly.
You miss them?
Of course.
Might sound weird, since I never knew them, but I feel like they would be so proud of you, Simon.
Yeah.
We were quiet another minute, feeling the night around us. Wanna go back to the house? I asked.
Yeah.
He kissed the top of my head as we began to make our way back, hands stuck together like someone had spread crazy glue on them. I'd left Simon to clean up the mess from dinner. I wanted a quick shower before bed. After washing away the days of airport and travel, I threw on an old t-shirt and boy shorts, too tired for the lingerie I had packed. Yes, I had packed lingerie.
Come on, I was no nun.
I stood in front of the mirror in my bedroom.
Yep.
I had totally claimed the big one, after blow-drying my hair, when I saw him appear in the doorway. He was on his way to his room after his own shower, wearing pajama pants and a towel wrapped around his neck. I was exhausted, but not so exhausted I didn't appreciate the form in front of me. I watched him in the mirror as he appraised me as well.
Have a good shower? He asked.
Yes, it felt amazing.
Heading to bed?
I can barely keep my eyes open, I replied, yawning hugely to punctuate.
Can I get you anything? Water, tea, anything?
I turned to face him as he stepped inside. No water, no tea. But there is one thing I'd like before I go to sleep, I purred, taking a few steps his way.
What's that?
Good night kiss? His eyes darkened.
Oh, hell, is that all? That I can do.
He closed the distance between us and slipped his arms easily around my waist.
Kiss me, you fool.
I teased, falling into his embrace as if in an old-time melodrama.
One kissing fool coming up.
He laughed, but within seconds, no one was laughing. And within minutes, no one was standing. After falling into Pillow Town, we scrambled about, arms and legs twisting this way and that, kisses becoming more and more frantic. My shirt bunched up around my waist, and the feeling of his hi there against my hoo-ha was indescribable. He rained kisses down upon my neck, licking and sucking as I moaned like I was trying to win a contest where the winner gets a Simon to lick and suck on her neck. To be fair, I'd never actually heard a whore moan in church, but I had a feeling it sounded a lot like the unholy sounds pouring forth from my mouth. He flipped me about like a rag doll and settled me on top of him, my legs on either side, the way I'd wanted to be for so long. He sighed, gazing up as I impatiently pushed my hair away from my face so I could truly appreciate the magnificence I was perched on. We slowed our movements, then stopped altogether, staring unabashedly at each other, appraising each other without shame.
"Incredible,"
he breathed, reaching to gently cup my face as I nuzzled his hand.
"That's a good word for it, yes. Incredible."
I turned to kiss his fingertips. He stared into my eyes again, those sex sapphires doing their voodoo that made me a puddle of voodoo goo for him to woo. See what he did to me?
"I don't want to screw this up,"
he said suddenly, his words breaking me from my Seussian rhymes.
"Wait, what?"
I asked, shaking my head to clear it.
"This. You. Us. I don't want to screw this up,"
he insisted, sitting up underneath me, my legs wrapping around to his back.
"Okay, so don't,"
I ventured, unsure where this was going.
"I mean, you need to know. I have no experience with this."
I raised an eyebrow.
"I have a wall back home that would disagree with that,"
I laughed, and he crushed me to his chest inexplicably hard.
"Hey, hey, what's up? What's going on?"
I soothed, my hands rubbing up and down his back.
"Caroline, Jesus, how do I say this without sounding like an episode of Dawson's Creek?"
he stumbled, talking into my neck. I couldn't help it. I chuckled a little as Pacey flashed into my head, and that brought Simon back. I pulled away a bit so I could see him, and he smiled ruefully.
"Okay, Dawson's be damned. I really like you, Caroline. But I haven't had a girlfriend since high school, and I have no clue how to do this. But you need to know that what I feel for you, shit, it's just different, okay? And whatever your wall would say back home, I need you to know that this, what we have or will have, it's different, okay? You know that, right?"
He was telling me I was different, that I was no replacement for the harem, and this I knew.
He looked at me so earnestly, so seriously, and my heart opened even more. I pressed a gentle kiss to his sweet lips.
"First of all, I do know this. Second of all, you're better at this than you think."
I smiled, pressing his eyes closed and kissing each eyelid. "And for the record, I loved Dawson's Creek, and you did the WB proud." I laughed as his eyes sprang back open and relief rushed in. I tucked him into my nook and held him there as we rocked back and forth, the rush of the earlier hormones subsiding as we found this new space, this quiet intimacy that was becoming almost as addicting.
"I like that we're taking things slow. You give good woo," I whispered.
He tensed underneath me. I could feel him shaking a little.
"I give good woo?"
He laughed, tears springing to his eyes as he tried to control his laughter.
"Oh, shut up," I cried, smacking him with a pillow.
We laughed for a few more minutes, falling back into the lush bed, and as the jet lag finally overtook us, we settled in, together. There was no question in my mind now about sleeping in separate rooms. I wanted him here, with me. Surrounded by pillows and Spain, we nooked. The last thought I had before slipping into sleep with his strong arms wrapped around me, I might be falling in love with my wall banger.
Chapter 17. I was awakened this morning by a great rumbling. Forgetting where I was for a split second, I automatically assumed I was home and we were experiencing a tremor. I was halfway out of bed with one foot on the floor before I noticed that the view outside my bedroom window was decidedly more blue than it was at home and decidedly more Mediterranean. And the rumbling? That was no tremor. It was Simon snoring. Snoring. Snoring to beat the band, and by beat the band, I mean beat that band up with his nose, which was emitting the most unearthly sound. I clapped my hands over my mouth to hold in the laughter and crept back into bed, the better to appraise the situation. True to form, I'd taken over most of the bed in the night, and he'd been relegated to the far corner, where he was now curled into a little ball with a pillow tucked between his legs. But what he lacked in square footage, he made up for in sound. The sounds pouring forth from his nasal passages registered somewhere between grizzly bear and exploding tractor trailer. I wiggled across the mile-wide bed, curling myself around his head and looking down at his face. Even while making these horrific sounds, he was adorable. I carefully placed my fingers next to his nose and plugged, and then waited. After about 10 seconds, he inhaled and shook his head, looking around wildly. He relaxed when he saw me perched on the pillows next to him. He smiled a sleepy smile.
Hey, what's up?
He mumbled, rolling into me and wrapping his arms around my waist, resting his head on my tummy. I ran my hands through his hair, delighting in the casual freedom we finally had in touching each other.
Just woke up. Someone was quite noisy on this side of the bed.
He closed one eye and looked up at me.
I hardly think someone as flaily as you can complain about anything.
Flaily? That's not even a word, I huffed, enjoying his arms around me more than I wanted to admit.
Flaily, as in one who flails, as in one who, even though she is sleeping in a bed the size of Alcatraz, still needs almost the entire mattress to spread out and kick, he insisted, accidentally on purpose pushing my shirt up so he could rest his head on my naked tummy.
Flailing is better than snoring, Mr. Snorry Pants, I teased again, trying not to notice his stubble scraping against my skin in the most delicious way.
You flail, I snore. Whatever will we do about this?
He smiled happily, still half asleep. Earplugs and shin guards?
Yep, that's sexy. We can suit up before bed each night.
He sighed, pressing the tiniest of kisses just above my belly button. A noise that sounded sadly like a whimper escaped my lips before I could pull it back,
and my ears burned as I took in what he'd said about each night, as in sleeping together each night. Oh, my. We ate a quick breakfast at the house, then headed into town. I fell in love with the village instantly. The old stone streets, the whitewashed walls glimmering in the blazing sunlight, the beauty that poured forth from every open archway, from every speck of azure that peeked through from the coast to the friendly smiles on the sweet faces of the people who called this enchanted spot home. I was hooked. It was market day, and we wandered in and out of stalls, picking up fresh fruit to snack on later. I've seen beautiful places on this earth, but this town was heaven for me. I'd truly never experienced anything like it. Now, I had been traveling alone for years, finding my own company quite pleasant. But traveling with Simon, it was cool. Just cool. He was quiet the way I am when I'm seeing something new. He never felt the need to fill a silence with chattery words. We were content to soak up the scenery. When we did speak, it was to point out something we thought the other shouldn't miss, like the puppies playing in a dooryard, or an old man and woman talking back and forth over their balconies. He was a great companion. We strolled back to the rental car, the afternoon sun toasting through the thin cotton covering my shoulders, when my hand tangled with his in the most unassuming way, and when he took the time to open my door for me and lean down to kiss me in the warm Spanish sunshine. His lips and the smell of olive trees were the only things I needed in the entire world. In the time I'd known Simon, I'd committed several images of him to memory. Seeing him for the first time, clad only in a sheet and a smirk. Driving back across the bridge with him the night of Jillian's housewarming when we called a truce. Warped and blurry Simon as seen from inside an afghan. Backlit by tiki torches, wet and looking devilishly handsome by the hot tub. In a recent addition to my Best of Simons, the sight of him underneath me as he clutched me close, his warm skin and sweet breath all over me as we nooked in the giant bed of sin. But nothing, and I mean nothing, was hotter than watching Simon work. I mean it. I actually had to fan myself a little, which he took no notice of because when he was working, he was delightfully focused. And now, here I sat, watching Simon work. We'd driven up the coast to get some test shots at a place a local guide had told him about, and the perilously handsome Simon now concentrated completely on the task at hand. As he'd explained to me, it wasn't about the actual pictures he was taking. It was about testing the light and the colors. So as he scrambled his way from rock to rock, I sat on a blanket we dug out of the trunk and observed. Perched on cliffs high above the sea, we could see for miles. The rocky shoreline stretched and curled back in on itself as millions of waves poured in from the deep sea. And while the scenery was gorgeous, what had my attention was the way the tip of Simon's tongue poked out as he surveyed the scene. The way he bit on his lower lip as he puzzled over something. The way excitement broke over his face when he saw something new through his lens. I was glad I had something to do, something to fixate on, as the beginning of a battle was starting to wage inside my body. Ever since we'd acknowledged the pressure that giant bed could have placed on us, all I could think about was that very pressure. As well as the pressure of an O long denied, waiting patiently, and sometimes impatiently, for her release. The pressure was so strong, so intense, that every single part of me could feel it. Currently taking sides in this internal debate were Brain, Lower Caroline, speaking for the distant O, backbone, and although she'd mainly kept quiet lately, letting brain and nerves take control, heart was now weighing in. It should be noted that L.C., Lower Caroline wanted a hip but abbreviated name, had somehow drafted Simon's penis into the fray. And even though his penis didn't have direct access to her yet, L.C. felt it necessary to speak up on his behalf. While I didn't much like the term penis, internally I felt strange about calling him dick or cock, so penis it was, for now. Now, backbone and brain were solidly in the wait-for-sex camp, believing this essential to the foundation of this burgeoning relationship. L.C., and therefore Simon's penis, were in the have-sex-with-him-as-soon-as-possible society, obviously. O, while not officially in residence, could be counted among L.C.